Pretend to be my wife, the Duke of Thornwood murmured, sliding into the empty chair beside her, for the next half hour, and I will be in your debt for the rest of my life. Imogen Crane turned to stare at the man who had just sat down uninvited beside her at the wedding breakfast, and found herself looking into the most harried pair of dark eyes she had ever seen on a duke. I beg your pardon, she said. There is no time to beg anything, said Nathaniel, his voice pitched low beneath the chatter of the great flower-decked room. Across the garden by the white roses stands a lady in a great quantity of yellow lace, who was once nearly my betrothed and has decided, this afternoon, to become so again. Beside her stands my aunt, who has spent 3 years attempting to marry me to anyone with a pulse and a pedigree, and who has just spotted me alone and undefended. In approximately 1 minute they will descend upon me together. If, when they arrive, I am deep in tender conversation with a wife they have never heard of, they will be routed. If I am alone, I am lost. He glanced at her. You are seated by yourself, you are wearing half mourning, and you have the only sensible face in this entire garden. I am desperate, madam, and I throw myself upon your mercy. Despite herself, despite everything, the corner of Imogen's mouth twitched. She was a widow of 27, seated alone as widows so often were at the weddings of other people's daughters, watching a happiness that was no longer offered to women like her, and she had been rather wretchedly contemplating her own quiet plate when this large, panicked, undeniably handsome man had dropped into the chair beside her and asked her to commit a small social fraud. You wish me, she said slowly, to pretend to be the Duchess of Thornwood, a person whom I gather no one believes to exist. They will believe it if you do it well. He leaned a fraction closer, and she caught the genuine alarm beneath his composure. I am told I am the most guarded man in 3 counties. None of it is the slightest use against an aunt. Help me, madam, and I will count it the greatest service anyone has ever rendered me. Across the garden, the lady in yellow lace began to move. Very well, said Imogen Crane, and turned her chair toward him, and smiled as though he had said something charming. But you must lead, Your Grace, for I have no notion what sort of wife I am meant to be. The relief that crossed his face was almost comic. A clever one, he said. I should never have married a foolish one. Now laugh, if you can manage it, as though I have just been very witty. She laughed. It was not even difficult, the absurdity of it carried her. And the Duke of Thornwood, who a moment before had looked hunted, settled back in his chair with the ease of a man entirely at home, and began to talk to her in a low, warm, conspiratorial murmur of nothing at all, of the weather and the roses and the dreadfulness of wedding cake, as though they had been married 10 contented years and had no greater care in the world. When the lady in yellow lace and the formidable aunt arrived a moment later, they found the famously unmarriageable Duke of Thornwood leaning toward a serene, smiling woman in dove-gray half-mourning, his hand resting near hers upon the table, the two of them sharing the easy quiet of long intimacy. Nathaniel, said the aunt, drawing up short, I was not aware you had that is, who is your? Aunt Hortensia, said the Duke smoothly rising, may I present my wife, my dear, my aunt, of whom you have heard a very great deal. A very great deal indeed, said Imogen warmly, extending her hand with the perfect composure of a duchess who feared no one. How I have longed to meet you. Nathaniel speaks of you constantly. The aunt's mouth opened and shut. The lady in yellow lace had gone the precise color of curdled cream, and the Duke of Thornwood looked down at his counterfeit wife with an expression that, for a moment, did not look counterfeit at all. It was over in 10 minutes. The aunt retreated to spread the astonishing news. The lady in yellow lace fled the garden entirely, and the Duke of Thornwood sank back into his chair beside Imogen Crane and laughed, a real laugh, low and disbelieving. Madam, he said, you were magnificent. You routed 2 armies without firing a shot. I do not know your name. Imogen Crane, Mrs. Crane, She folded her hands. And now, Your Grace, having served my purpose, I shall return to being invisible, which is what widows are for at weddings. It was, I confess, the most diverting half hour I have spent in a year. He looked at her for a long moment, and something shifted in his harried, handsome face. Don't, he said. I beg your pardon. Don't go back to being invisible. Don't return to your corner. He sat forward. The trouble, Mrs. Crane, is that my aunt is not a fool, only a nuisance, and by tomorrow she will have told all of London that I am married, and by the day after she will wish to be introduced to my wife properly, at length, and to inspect her, and to discover whether she is real. If you vanish now, I am exposed as a liar, and worse, I am once more fair game for every matchmaker and former betrothed in the kingdom. He spread his hands. I find I have made a terrible tangle, and only you can untangle it. I have a proposition, a mad one. Hear me out before you flee. Imogen, who had not been asked to hear out a single interesting thing in the long grey years of her widowhood, found that she was leaning toward him. I am listening, she said. Continue the pretense, said the Duke of Thornwood, a little while only, be seen with me. Let the world believe what my aunt has already told it. It would buy me peace from the matchmakers, and it would buy you, he hesitated. Forgive me, but a season of not being invisible. Of being for once the most envied woman in any room, instead of the one in the corner. A bargain. Each of us spares the other something. It was, she thought, the strangest offer ever made to her, and the most tempting which alarmed her more. And what, she said carefully, would you require of such an arrangement, Your Grace? For I am a respectable woman, widowed but not without honour, and I will not. There is one condition, he interrupted, only one, and it is the opposite of what you fear. He looked at her very seriously now, all the lightness gone. I will not have you pretend a single feeling you do not have, not one. The world may see whatever performance keeps the wolves at bay. But you and I, in private, will be honest with one another, always, because I have spent my whole life surrounded by people performing affection they did not feel, and I cannot bear to add one more. That is my condition, honesty between us, even in the middle of a lie. Imogen Crane stared at him. Of all the conditions a duke might have named, she had not expected that one. She had braced for impropriety, for some demand on her person or her silence. Instead, he had asked her, in the middle of arranging an elaborate falsehood, to never be false with him. That, she said slowly, is the most peculiar condition I have ever heard. I am told, a peculiar man. Then I accept it. She held out her hand to seal the bargain, and he took it, and neither of them, she noticed, was quick to let go. Honesty between us, even in the middle of a lie. What followed was meant to be a performance, and for a little while perhaps it was. He called upon her openly, as a husband would. They were seen together at the theatre and the park, and London, which adored nothing so much as a romance, embraced the sudden, mysterious Duchess of Thornwood with delight. The matchmakers withdrew in defeat. The lady in yellow lace married a baronet out of spite, and the formidable aunt, having inspected Imogen Crane at length and found her gracious and entirely unintimidated, declared her the best thing to happen to her impossible nephew. But it was the condition that undid them both. For in the carriages between the parties, and in the quiet hours at his estate where there was no one to perform for, they kept their bargain. They were honest. And honesty, the Duke of Thornwood discovered, was a far more dangerous intimacy than any pretense. She told him true things of her late husband, a good man she had grieved and slowly made her peace with, of the loneliness of a widow's life, the long invisibility, the way the world set such women aside. And he told her true things he had never told anyone, of his own guardedness, of how he had learned that everyone who smiled at a duke wanted something, of how he had stopped believing he would ever be known. You are known now, she told him one evening, on the terrace of his great house, by me. You made me promise it, after all. And the Duke of Thornwood looked at the woman beside him, who had begun as a stranger he had grabbed in a panic and become, somehow, the only person in his life he never had to perform for, and understood that the pretense had ended some time ago, and that what stood in its place was not pretense at all. "Imogen," he said, "I must confess something to you. It is the most honest thing I have ever said, and I am terrified to say it, which is itself a novelty for me." She went still. "We promised honesty, so you must." "When I sat down beside you at that wedding," he said, "I wanted only to escape my aunt. I chose you because you had a sensible face and a free chair." He turned to her. "But I cannot tell you when it changed, only that has, entirely. I no longer wish you to pretend to be my wife, Imo. The pretending has become unbearable to me, because every time you play the part I am reminded that it is only a part, and I find I cannot endure that any longer." He took both her hands. "I am asking you to stop pretending. I am asking you to be my wife in truth, not for the matchmakers, not for my aunt, for me, 'cause I love you, honestly and entirely, and a man bound by his own condition cannot say it any other way but plainly." The tears stood in her eyes, but she was smiling, the radiant unguarded smile he had first coaxed from her across a garden of white roses. "You made me promise never to pretend a feeling I did not have," she whispered. "Do you know how cruel that condition has been, Nathaniel? For I have been feeling a great deal these weeks that I was not permitted to pretend away. I have had to carry it about quite honestly, with nowhere to put it." She pressed his hands. "I love you too. I have for some while. I was only waiting, like a coward, for you to be honest first." "Then we are both bound by the same condition," said the Duke of Thornwood, "and have both, at last, obeyed it." He drew her to him there on the terrace in the last of the evening light, and kissed her, and it was the first thing between them that had ever been entirely true from the very beginning. They were married within the month, quietly in truth this time, and the great families of London, who had spent weeks gossiping about the mysterious Duchess of Thornwood, were astonished to learn that the wedding they had all believed long past had not yet actually happened. The aunt wept with happiness and took full credit. The Duke did not mind. He had stopped minding what anyone thought. Somewhere on a terrace, in the company of the only person who had ever known the whole truth of him. On the evening of their true wedding, he found his wife on that same terrace, looking out at the dark gardens. "Do you remember," he said, "coming to stand beside her, when I asked you to pretend to be my wife, and named you the one condition you never expected?" "That we should never be false with one another," she said, leaning into him, "even in the middle of a lie. I have thought a great deal about that condition, Nathaniel. I believe it is the wisest thing you have ever done, though you did it by accident, in a panic, to escape your aunt." "I have done many things by accident in a panic," said the Duke of Thornwood, drawing her close, "and married the best of all of them." He pressed his lips to her hair. "I asked you once to pretend, Imogen. I shall spend the rest of my life grateful that you were too honest to manage it for long. You were never my pretend wife at all, I think. You were only my real one, a little before either of us knew it. And I mean to keep you, honestly and openly, for the whole of my days, with no pretending left in either of us, ever again."